The Catra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Catra AI. Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're doing a deep dive into something that honestly changes how you look at, well, almost everything. Human behavior, policy, even your own daily choices. We're tackling Behavioral Insights by Michael Halsworth and Elspeth Kirkman.
It's a really fascinating area, and the book addresses a fundamental problem in how we usually design things, like government policies or even business strategies.
Which is?
Well, the assumption that people are perfectly rational, you know, that we always weigh the pros and cons logically. Like economists sometimes model us the whole homo economicus idea.
Right, the logical robot version of us.
Exactly. But Halsworth and Kirkman argue pretty forcefully that we're homo sapiens. We're driven by emotions, mental shortcuts, social cues. We're predictably irrational, you could say.
And that mismatch, that's why things often fail. Like, we design for the robot, but the human shows up.
Precisely. And it's why we often struggle with big challenges, getting people to save more or make healthier choices or even just fill out important forms on time.
Yeah, that gap between what we intend to do and what we actually do.
That's what they call the intention-action gap. It's huge. Think about New Year's resolutions, right? We intend to go to the gym.
Don't remind me.
But actually getting there consistently, that's where the gap lies. And this book offers a really practical, evidence-based toolkit for bridging that gap, not by trying to force rationality, but by understanding and working with our actual human nature.
Okay, so who are these authors? They sound like they know their stuff.
Oh, they absolutely do. Michael Halsworth and Elspeth Kirkman aren't just academics theorizing. They were right there at the start applying this stuff. They were key figures in the Behavioral Insights team, or BIT.
Ah, the famous nudge unit from the UK government.
That's the one. Yeah. They basically pioneered taking behavioral science out of the lab and into real-world policy, starting back around 2010.
So they have serious practical experience. They weren't just writing papers.
Not at all. Halsworth was really central in taking BIT's approach global, working with governments all over the world. And Kirkman's background is incredibly important, too. She oversaw hundreds, literally hundreds, of randomized controlled trials, RCTs.
Wow, hundreds. So when they say something works,
they have the data to back it up. They've tested it rigorously in the real world. Their perspective is super pragmatic, focused on what actually moves the needle, what scales up, and crucially, what can be proven to work.
Okay, so let's get into the book itself. What's the core idea, the framework they lay out?
Well, they start by kind of demystifying behavioral insights, moving it from just a collection of, you know, interesting psychological quirks to a systematic way to solve problems.
And it begins with how our minds work.
Yeah, fundamentally. They lean heavily on the dual process theory. You probably heard of it. The idea that we have two ways of thinking. System two is our slow, deliberate, conscious, effortful thinking. Like doing your taxes or learning a new skill.
The one that feels like hard work.
Exactly. And then there's system one. That's the fast, automatic, intuitive, emotional, effortless thinking. It's our mental autopilot. Recognizing a face, driving a familiar route, reacting instinctively.
And the big insight is?
The big insight is that while we think System 2 is in charge, and while we often design policies assuming System 2 will make the decision, in reality, System 1 runs the show most of the time. Maybe 95% of the time.
Wow, 95%.
So the key is to stop designing primarily for that careful, rational System 2, and start designing for the reality of System 1, for how people actually make decisions, often quickly and without much conscious thought.
So it's not just random nudging, there's a method.
Absolutely, they emphasize a structured approach, often framed as test, define the specific behavior you want to change, very precisely, then diagnose the behavioral barriers, what's stopping people, is complexity, forgetfulness, social pressure, fear.
Okay, define, diagnose.
Then design an intervention specifically targeted at that barrier. And this is where their other framework, EAST, comes in handy as a checklist for designing good interventions. Make it easy, attractive, social, and timely.
EAST. Got it. And the last step?
The crucial one, test. Rigorously test your intervention, ideally with a randomized controlled trial, to see if it actually worked. Don't just assume.
And they also talk about ethics, right? The whole nanny state concern.
Yes, they address that directly. The ethical guidelines are key. Interventions should be transparent. They must make it easy for people to choose otherwise. Easy opt-out. And critically, they should help people achieve their own goals, not manipulate them into something they don't want.
That makes sense. Someone always designs the environment, the choices. better to do it consciously and ethically.
Exactly. A neutral environment rarely exists anyway.
Okay, let's dig into some of those core concepts, the user's guide to the human mind, as they put it. We're predictably irrational. Where should we start? Maybe loss aversion. That sounds important.
It really is. Loss aversion is our powerful tendency to feel the pain of a loss much more strongly than the pleasure of an equivalent gain. Psychologists often say losses hurt about twice as much as gains feel good.
So losing 20 pounds feels twice as bad as finding 20 pounds feels good.
Pretty much, yeah. And this has huge implications. It helps explain why we often resist change, even beneficial change. We focus on what we might lose, the familiar way of doing things, even if it's inefficient, rather than the potential future gain.
That makes sense for why organizational change is so difficult. People cling to the status quo.
Absolutely. You have to frame the change carefully. Maybe focus on the loss of not changing the opportunity cost.
Interesting. Okay, what about the one that gets me every time? Present bias.
Yes, our old friend. The strong preference for smaller, immediate rewards over larger, delayed ones. It's the engine of instant gratification.
Tell me about it. Why save for retirement decades away when that shiny new gadget is right here now?
Exactly. Our brains are just wired to prioritize the present. So long-term goals that require short-term sacrifice are incredibly hard for us. Policies that rely on people delaying gratification often run headfirst into this bias.
Like, my justification for buying expensive coffee beans, it'll save money long-term, when really I just wanted the good coffee now.
That's a perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we use the EAST framework to counter these things?
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with easy. Making things effortless.
Right. Reducing friction. Getting rid of the hassle.
Precisely. Any little barrier, any complexity, any extra step, what they sometimes call sludge, can derail our intentions because it requires effortful System 2 thinking, and System 1 just wants the path of least resistance.
So the ultimate easy button is the default effect.
It's incredibly powerful. Because of inertia or status quo bias, we tend to stick with whatever option is pre-selected for us. We just go with the flow.
And the classic example here is pension auto-enrollment, isn't it?
It really is the poster child. Before, you usually had to actively choose to opt into a pension plan. Lots of forms, decisions, friction.
So people put it off. Intention-action gap again.
Right. But then they flipped the default.
Mm-hmm.
New employees were automatically enrolled but could easily opt out. Participation rates skyrocketed. Millions more people started saving for retirement, not because they suddenly became more rational or future-focused, but because saving became the effortless default option.
It's amazing how powerful just changing that default setting is. But again, doesn't that feel a bit sneaky? Just setting the default to get the behavior you want.
That's where the ethics come back in. Remember, transparency, easy opt-out, and aligning with the person's likely goals. Most people say they want to save for retirement. Auto-enrollment helps them achieve that stated goal by overcoming inertia and present bias. It's arguably more ethical than a system where friction prevents people from doing what they intend.
That's a strong argument. Okay, let's move to the social part of EAST. How do our peers influence us?
Hugely. We're fundamentally social creatures. We constantly look to others to figure out what to do, what's normal. The book gives a great example from the UK Tax Authority, HMRC.
Instead of just threatening fines for late payment.
Yeah. They tested adding a simple sentence to reminder letters. 9 out of 10 people in the UK pay their tax on time. Just stating the social norm.
And that worked better than threats.
Significantly better, and at almost no cost. People want to conform. They don't want to be the odd one out who isn't doing the right thing. It taps into that deep social wiring.
Wow. Similar to the O'Power energy bills example.
Exactly. Showing people how their energy use compared to their efficient neighbors, that social comparison led to real, sustained reductions in energy consumption. Nobody wants to be the energy hog on the block.
And that also brings in the timely aspect, doesn't it? Giving people the information right when they can act on it.
Timing is crucial. A reminder is much more effective closer to the moment of decision or action. Think about appointment reminders. A letter, weeks in advance, easily forgotten. A text message the day before. Much more likely to prompt action and reduce no-shows. It hits System 1 when it's relevant.
This all sounds compelling, but you mentioned the critical final step, testing. Why are Halsworth and Kirkman so insistent on randomized controlled trials, RCTs? Can't we just use common sense?
Because our common sense and intuition about what will work are often wrong. And what works in one context, say London, might completely fail in Leeds or Lagos. Context matters enormously.
So the RCT is the gold standard for proof.
It really is. by randomly assigning people to either receive the intervention, the treatment group, or the control group, and then comparing the outcomes, you can be much more confident that any difference you see was actually caused by your intervention, not just random chance or some other factor.
It keeps the field honest, prevents wasting money on interventions that just feel right but don't actually work.
Exactly. It grounds the whole approach in rigorous evidence. An idea is just a hypothesis until it's tested.
Okay, so if we boil this down, what are the absolute core messages, the big takeaways from this whole behavioral insights approach?
I'd say three main themes stand out. First is the fundamental shift in focus. Stop focusing so much on changing people's deep-seated attitudes or beliefs or trying to boost their willpower. Instead, focus on changing the environment, the context, the choice architecture around them.
Make it easier to do the right thing. Don't fix the person, fix the situation.
That's a great way to put it. Second, the power of small changes, outsized impacts. You often don't need massive budgets or complex new laws. Simple, psychologically informed tweaks, changing a sentence, adding a reminder, switching a default can have disproportionately large effects.
So the reflection there is, next time you face a big problem, look for the small friction point first. Don't jump straight to the giant, expensive solution.
Yes, look for the pebble in the shoe before you redesign the entire road. And the third theme is the anti-sludge movement.
Getting rid of unnecessary friction.
Exactly. Yeah. Actively identifying and removing sludge, overly complex forms, confusing instructions, burdensome processes that get in the way of people accessing services or making good choices. Auditing for sludge should be standard practice. Think about how much time you waste on pointless admin. Removing it helps everyone.
That's a great practical takeaway. The book must have some really memorable ways of phrasing these ideas. Any key quotes or concepts that stick out?
Definitely. They capture the philosophy well. One idea that resonates is something like, behavioral insights isn't about fixing irrational people. It's about designing a world that's more forgiving of our predictable human nature.
I like that. It shifts the blame from the individual to the system design, makes it less judgmental.
Right. And then there's the power of defaults. The most powerful choice architect is the one who sets the default. That really highlights the responsibility involved.
Absolutely. And the commitment to evidence.
Yeah, the idea that an idea for a behavioral intervention is just a hypothesis. The real work begins when you test it rigorously in the real world. It emphasizes that scientific discipline.
So let's make this really concrete for listeners. How can we use these insights in our everyday lives?
Okay, personal life. For habit building, lean hard on that easy principle. Reduce friction. Want to exercise in the morning? Lay out your gym clothes the night before. Want to eat healthier snacks? Put the fruit bowl front and center. Hide the cookies in the back of the cupboard. Make the good choice the path of least resistance.
Design your own environment. I like that. What about finances? That present bias is tough.
Automation is your best friend here. Combat present bias by making saving the default. Set up an automatic transfer to your savings or retirement account for the day you get paid. The money moves before your impulsive system one even sees it or has a chance to spend it. Out of sight, out of mind, into savings.
Smart. And professionally, if you're designing something or managing people.
Run a sludge audit. Seriously. Mm-hmm. Look at your forms, your processes, your website. Where are the unnecessary steps? Where do people get stuck? Simplify, simplify, simplify.
And for managing teams.
Use social proof positively. Instead of nagging the few who are late with reports, maybe highlight that 85% of the team submits reports on time. Frame the desired behavior as the norm. In areas like public health, those timely reminders, text messages for appointments, medication reminders, they're low-cost, high-impact ways to reduce no-shows and improve adherence.
It really does seem applicable everywhere. Thinking back on the whole deep dive, what was the biggest surprise or the most striking thing for you?
For me, I think it was the consistent power of social norms, even among supposed experts. Like that example of doctors reducing unnecessary antibiotic prescriptions just because they were shown data comparing them to their peers. It shows how deeply ingrained that social comparison is, regardless of profession or status. We all care what the group thinks.
That's a great point. For me, it was probably the ethical framework they emphasized, the idea that this isn't about manipulation, but about empowerment, helping people achieve their own stated goals, like saving money or being healthier by making it easier for them. That focus on transparency and preserving choice feels really crucial to doing this responsibly. It's about being a helpful guide, not a hidden persuader.
Well said. It's about designing systems for humans, not against them.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker. Another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.